Clone Wars spread.
Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network's Look Back at the Clone Wars micro-series.
Against this threat, upon the Jedi Knights falls the duty to lead the newly formed Army of the Republic.
While the full-length Clone Wars show is on summer hiatus, come back to RepublicForces.com this summer and join Dan, Jen, Jerry, Barrett, and Nathan as they look back at all 25 episodes of the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars series that aired from 2003 through 2005.
You have been selected for this task because you are the best, the elite. You all know what to do.
In these matters, trust your insight, we do. May the Force be with you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our final episode of Republic Forces Radio Network's summer programming. It's the end of our discussion of the Clone Wars micro-series. And joining me, as they have patiently all summer long, are Jen.
Hey, guys.
Jerry.
Hey.
Barrett.
We go together like bang, bang, shoo-bee-doo-wop-doo-wop. I feel like this is our last show, where we're out of summer school now, man. You know, we should be doing some sort of dance where we're popping our thumbs and fingers and fists together. And it's kind of sad. I'm going to have to admit, it's kind of sad. I like getting together with my friends, you know, and I think we might talk about it. But, you know, we've been through a lot this summer. We've been through the death of Bin Laden. I mean, we've been through a lot this summer.
To echo some of Nathan's jokes from previous shows, who is the valedictorian of this summer school class?
And speaking of Nathan P. Butler.
Hey, everybody, it's Nathan P. Butler from... Wait, nope, I used up my last plug last episode, and I think I will nominate as valedictorian Jen for saying that Yoda thought oh-ish last episode. I think that was beautiful. Or two episodes ago. That gives you extra credit.
And we are going to be discussing episode 25, the conclusion to the Clone Wars micro-series. And what a conclusion it is. And as we've done with the last two episodes, we're going to break this one in two parts. First, we will discuss the Battle of Coruscant, how it wraps up, and how it is impacted or how it impacts other things that have come since, specifically Labyrinth of Evil. So I guess actually Labyrinth of Evil kind of came right before it, didn't it?
Yeah, 2 months.
So we're led in by Shakti, Roran Karab, and Falmadonna retreating with Palpatine, putting him in his escape craft or escape train or whatever the heck that thing is. And though Palpatine doesn't believe that they're still being followed, we get the great line from Shakti that they are coming. And as the pod escapes, we see who they are. A multitude of Magna droids. So let me just say, in this battle, I think we learned one thing. Shakti would be much better if she traded up to a double-bladed lightsaber.
Yeah, see, now, here's where I've got to first react. I was amazed of how well she does in this battle. I mean, she must, I forget the count, but there must have been, what, a dozen Magna Guards there? And she more than held her own. She loses her lightsaber, grabs one of their sticks, and she's even better. And I'm just thinking, wow, they should really make a lightsaber that's got a big long staff with two smaller blades coming out, and she'd be awesome. But it just, this wasn't the same character that could have possibly been fighting General Grievous at the end of the other season.
Well, you know, I mean, if she's going to escape death at the hands of Lucas and company repeatedly, you know, deleted scenes in Revenge of the Sith and all of that, then shoot, she should be able to handle some droids. I do like the fact that she's the one who stays behind to fight the droids here. Because that actually is one of the few times that the other stuff, like Reversal of Fortune, the web strip by Pablo Hidalgo and Tom Hodges, tries to sort of grab Labyrinth of Evil. They've been grabbing Labyrinth of Evil most of the time, but they actually try to grab back to this and sort of link it back in with everything. It's like they're trying to funnel everything back into sort of a semblance that everything's fitting together. Because they actually pick up with this. I mean, where we leave off with Shakti in this episode is exactly where Reversal of Fortune picks up with her. Where they learn who's dead, who's not from this particular battle. And this battle resonates outside of this. That whole web strip series follows a guy named Drake Logan, or Logan, or L-O-G-A-A-N, however you're supposed to pronounce it, who is Roran Korob's Padawan. So they take this micro series and sort of weave it together to give us something that does still expand outward from it, which is nice given the fact that, you know, you think of the current Clone Wars series, and it's almost like the broader EU tries to stay as far from it as humanly possible when it comes to other references. And this, I mean, they are picking up with it and running with it. Soon as Shaak Ti gets left behind, you're opening the door for that whole other storyline. It's great.
This whole stuff with Shaak Ti and the stuff we get with Mace Windu and Yoda, they're going all out kind of for like their last battle with the Jedi. Like, you can kind of tell Tartakovsky almost didn't want to let them go because he's just everything they could possibly do, he's having them do here. It's really fun. I was really enjoying getting to watch this and the stuff, not so much with Grievous this time, but the rest of it was just, it was really cool. I love how they kind of leave things hanging. I watched this episode. I ended up watching about 2 days before we went to see Revenge of the Sith. And when it leaves off, I was like, it was really hard to wait those 2 days because this was really intense and I could not wait to see what happened.
Jen, you make a great point how you said that Yoda and Mace were fighting and they're, you know, they're going all out and you're seeing actually, you know, I thought I was seeing the Shatterpoint because Mace is pulling out the same moves he was using in the desert and Yoda pulls out that creature that he rides on, and where's the stable of these creatures, I like how the creature is like not scared at all and Yoda has to tell him, you know, it's time for you to go now, and he's kind of, you know, the creature runs away but brings back the creature from the first micro series, from the very first one, I think, where Yoda is riding on that thing. And so you're right, it does seem like Jendi does not want to let these characters go because they're just too fun. But I do want to say this about Shaak Ti. This battle sequence with Shaak Ti and her staying behind to sacrifice herself, or so we think, made me a Shaak Ti fan. I mean, I picked up my first Shaak Ti action figure because of this scene. I mean, I am a big fan of Shaak Ti, and you know, I want to know more of her story after seeing this.
Well, just wait. They'll eventually probably retcon this and say that's not Shaak Ti. See, that's a older Ahsoka that you're seeing there, and that's how we're going to write her out of the series.
I saw a robe. I didn't see a boob window.
That's true. That is very true. You know, it's funny. We did talk about as much as we hate to think about it, the Mortis trilogy. We saw that older Ahsoka. And I remember us talking about, I don't know if it was actually in the show or just us talking around the show, but how, you know, it seems like it'd be difficult to fight with those really long head tails and that sort of thing. And here we see an older Togruta, and Shaak Ti, when played by an actress, hasn't tended to be very action-packed. We see her in The Force Unleashed, we figure, oh, well, that's just a video game. And you could say, well, this is just a cartoon. But you take something like The Force Unleashed and this, and you really kind of get a sense of how an older Togruta can fight, even with the physical changes, with the longer head tails and such. So we've definitely got a sense now of how an older Ahsoka could work as well.
So the two Jedi with Palpatine arrive at the secret bunker and find out, lo and behold, well, there's General Grievous. And at first, Palpatine looks surprised, but as he backs into the shadows, you notice his look of surprise disappears. This has, of course, always been the plan. We get the big reveal of Grievous's four arms, which I don't remember at that time if we'd seen all the promo stuff, gotten the action figure with Grievous's four arms. That's the thing about Star Wars. They never managed to keep good secrets. You knew about Darth Maul's saber, knew about Anakin and Vader. The point I'm making here is I don't know if these guys actually got to make the big reveal about the four arms or not. But what they did get to make the big reveal about was what happened shortly after the two Jedi were killed. And that's when Mace shows up and crushes Grievous's chest, giving him his signature cough. Or wait, maybe they didn't get to give him that.
You know, I remember when Episode 3 came out, people at work who just know that I'm a big Star Wars fan, they're like, hey, why did that Grievous, that robot, because they just thought he was a robot, they didn't really fully get it, like, why did that robot cough? And I was like, oh, well, you know, you got to understand this. And what's not very widely known, and I explained this Mace Windu scene, and they're just like, wow, that's so dumb. Huh, well, okay, whatever. The thing that I find interesting about how George Lucas approached all this, and we see it to this day, it's like, you did everything in your power to create an awesome-looking character with awesome just attributes about him. The four arms, swinging the lightsaber around, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, simultaneously, you did everything else in your power to just ruin his street cred as being a character I could take seriously.
Well, yeah, we see him do that in episode one. I mean, we get so many cool things about Jar Jar, and then he opens his... Oh, wait. Oh, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the double-blade lightsaber, and I just assumed it was Jar Jar's, but, I mean, come on.
You guys better be careful. Domina might be listening. She's going to get you.
I was just thinking we were safe because Marjorie doesn't like Clone Wars, so she's not listening. So we're all right there.
I think he's got a point there, though. I mean, you take General Grievous as a character, and he's built up to be this butt kicker, and Lucas then adds in the cough. Now, if you take it from a continuity standpoint, you're reading everything in order or something like that, you're like, oh, he's got a cough in episode 3 because he gets crushed here. Now, granted, that doesn't hold anymore, because now in the current series, it's got to be before this, he's already coughing. But you got to wonder what's going through Lucas's head when he's the one who decides, you know, because it's not continuity. There is no, well, before this happened to him. No, there is none of that. You're making the character for the very first time, and you're saying, I'd like him to cough like a smoker. I mean, unless he was wanting to do something to allude back to those anti-smoking commercials with R2-D2 and C-3PO, it seems like there was no... I don't see the legitimate reason to do it. If you want to do something to make the character unusual beyond the fact that he's got four arms and he spins the lightsabers and all that kind of stuff, why that particular character aspect? I mean, if the idea was to make him appear weak enough to fight Obi-Wan and have Obi-Wan beat him, then why play up Obi-Wan's skills so much? If you're going to play up Obi-Wan's skills, put him against somebody who doesn't have an obvious weakness to their physicality like that. It seems like... And maybe somebody can explain this to me, but to me, it's never really made sense. It's almost as if it's self-defeating. You know, how people say that episode 2 and 3 were a little bit better than episode 1 with Jonathan Hales being brought in to help polish the script and everything, but how the classics tended to be better received than the prequels because George Lucas needs someone there not to keep saying yes, but to say they're going to hit the brakes on him. Like, whoa, wait a second, George, this isn't going to work. It's almost like here somebody needed to say that to him because he's sabotaging his own character, not for a story reason, but just to make him different.
Yeah, yep. George, different isn't always good.
You know, it's funny, Nathan, you asked the question earlier about what was going through George Lucas's mind. That is the exact thing. This is a tangent, but that is the exact thing I said to my wife when the credits for Crystal Skull started rolling. I looked it over her and I said, what in the world is going through George Lucas's mind? And I have to ask that question seriously because it's like these little choices. I mean, Crystal Skull is hardly a little choice, but back to Grievous for a second. That little choice that he made somewhere along the way to give him a cough did nothing but to distract people from the movie itself saying, well, that's really dumb. Why does he keep doing that? Why did he do that? Why is Grievous doing it? He's a robot. He doesn't even have a throat, does he? What could possibly be coughing on him? And it's like, dude, what are you thinking, man?
Well, even if he had tried to give it an explanation in movie, and here we go, we're analyzing Revenge of the Sith, not so much a little bit the series. I mean, if when Grievous gets himself sucked out into space because he's about to get the crap knocked out of him by Obi-Wan, if that after that point he had had a cough, that would have been a little bit believable. Well, if you'd made it clear that he had organic parts before Obi-Wan murder killed him.
Does he need to breathe and thereby cough if he's going to be able to survive walking around in space? You know?
Oh, the episode 3 novel did great in saying he doesn't breathe. If he could laugh, he would laugh. I mean, the novel.
But he does laugh.
Well, whatever it said. Well, let me rephrase it. The novel even points out he doesn't breathe. He doesn't need to breathe. And it's just like, huh?
Yeah, there's odd stuff there, but...
the only thing that I can think of is maybe, just maybe, since Lucas has referred to the Grievous creation process as being meant to sort of show us the idea that Grievous is sort of a prototype for what Vader essentially becomes, living parts, mostly inorganic, however, that maybe his coughing and wheezing was meant to be a precursor to Vader with the breathing mask. But even then, you still don't need it because the breathing apparatus is a direct result, presumably, of the damage inflicted upon him on Mustafar. Unless they're going to show us Grievous going through the same thing and the same trauma to become what he became, it still seems like that's a lost point somewhere within the concept.
Yeah, that makes you think, you know, if they'd had like 2 more tries before Vader came around, he wouldn't have the wheeze.
I hate it. I think it's so stupid. I loved Grievous up until I actually saw Revenge of the Sith, and even now I groan when he comes on screen, and it's really too bad because he should be this awesome character and I don't like him, and it's really too bad.
It's almost symbolic, right? Mace Windu here is reaching out and with his hand and crushing our hopes for the Grievous character.
I don't mind the cough. I like the fact, I liked it better that Mace was the reason for the cough before they retconned it. Because then it just made the cough stupid. You know, he just has it because it's a character. It's a character, you know, motivation to have a cough. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And is he trying to have a callback? Because, you know, a lot of the Trekkers say that Darth Vader has an asthma problem. You know, is it trying to be something like that? You know, trying to be funny, I think. But, you know, I don't mind the cough. When it had its original, because it was awesome. You're right, Jen. It was awesome to look at episode three, the beginning of episode three, and watching Grievous, you know, after seeing this micro series, seeing Grievous cough, and you're like, you know, I know why he coughs. You know, it's kind of, you get to nerd out a little bit. And, you know, then they change it on you. So, yeah.
But Grievous does succeed in his mission, cough aside, and he gets Palpatine off planet. Now, before we go into the actual conclusion of this episode, and before we go over to Nelvan, Nathan, were there any other discrepancies, changes, issues between this and Labyrinth of Evil?
You know, actually, for this part, I think I've mentioned pretty much all the major ones. The key here being, remember, this and the Nelvan stuff is no longer concurrent with each other. There's the stuff that's happening on Nelvan, then they go to Tithe. While they're on Tithe, all this Coruscant stuff is happening. Then they take off to wind up on Coruscant, as we see at the very beginning of Revenge of the Sith. That's the key there. They've just shuffled the order just a little bit. And if you want to figure out what the real version of the Battle of Coruscant was, hey, good luck. Think of it just as different reports gave different accounts of what happened, the key being, hey, Palpatine was captured, Roron Korob apparently died somewhere within the process, Anakin and Obi-Wan get the call to come save him. Beyond that, they really don't specify enough to show us how this seamlessly blends together, because it doesn't. It's not seamless.
And what'll add another horrible stitch to that patchwork is when the current series tries to do it.
Oh, probably. Probably.
And if you don't think they will, you have not watched the last three seasons. But, once again, on the other side of the galaxy, Obi-Wan and Anakin are still on Nelvan. Anakin, fresh from his vision of what could become of himself if he is allowed to go astray, has found the missing Nelvan warriors, and they have been altered, to say the least.
Bob from Fight Club!
And we find out that it is the Techno Union who are developing some kind of weapon for General Grievous. And this weapon doesn't seem to be quite ready, but they're gonna release it anyway. It should be great fun.
By the way, I thought it was kind of cool that you saw, I guess, what was sort of like the blueprints for General Grievous on the screens. Did you catch that? Or
yeah, on the screen when Anakin's eavesdropping, you kind of see the blueprints or the specs for General Grievous there. Yeah,
that might have actually been in the last episode. They kind of blurred a little bit, but I thought that was interesting. What was the connection, other than the fact the Techno Union, I guess, did that job too, but was there a connection between Grievous's technology and what they're trying to do with the Nelvani warriors? Was I supposed to think that this was like a next step, or how you do the Grievous design when you have more biological parts to work with? Or was that just trying to tell us, hey, these are the same people that did Grievous and there's really no connection beyond that?
I don't understand the whole concept behind their stinking project. Let's give these guys a major weight gain problem and a laser on their arm, and they're going to be the perfect warrior because this coughing robot works so well.
Apparently the side effect was some thyroid condition.
Well, the main thing they had there was that siphon generator where it's sucking the energy out of the planet and it's causing the whole planet to be wintry all the time. It seems like it's almost like they had two separate projects going on at the same time. They're creating warriors, but at the same time, they're trying to harness the planet's life force, for lack of a better term.
See, I never caught what was going on with that. I never caught that was doing something to the weather of the planet. I assume they're extracting energy from the plant just to power the transformation of the individual specimens. I didn't really gather that there are two different plots going on there, but...
Well, yeah, they're connected that way, but it's, you know, the thing that's affecting the environment is what's being used for that, as opposed to it being a direct cause. I mean, it's not like the siphon generator itself is changing people. It's more like the siphon generator is pulling in the energy. Then how they use that energy, well, they can use it for anything. They can use it to transform them all into little, you know, Bob from Fight Club type characters, or they can use it all to pop popcorn or whatever they wanted to do, you know?
Popcorn.
Space popcorn.
So I guess pretty quickly we go through a scenario where Anakin's starting to defend himself, but the one Navani warrior that's not fully transformed kind of gets what's going on. Anakin foils the plot pretty quickly, gets all the Navani to kind of come to. I thought where this got really cool was the way Anakin loses his arm.
Yes, let's talk about that, because I hate that sound. When he's putting his arm through the force field to grab the crystal, there is a thing, my wife is a dental hygienist, and there is a thing that your dental hygienist uses on your teeth. It's a sharp little pick thing, and it squirts out water, and it's called, I wrote this down because she told me, it's called a cavitron, or an ultrasonic scaler, and it makes that horrible high-pitched sound in my head the entire time, and I hate it so very, very, very much. So hearing this just for the couple few seconds that it was, it made me want to hurt things.
Well, you know why the whole scene is in there for him to lose that particular hand, right? Anyone?
Oh, yeah.
Because he needs a different looking one by episode 3.
Exactly. They redesigned it for episode 3, and it's like, oops, and you know, and somehow he grows back part of his arm.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, I always hated that Terminator 2 gold arm, especially in the animated form. It just, to me, looked stupid. And then when he got the new one, even in this series, like, okay, that looks like an artificial hand. I don't know what skeleton playset they just slapped on your wrist this first time, but I absolutely hated that throughout this series.
I could not disagree with you more, because I love that. I love that gold-handed look. I love the skeleton because it looked like Terminator 2. I loved it. And it actually, this was the first action figure I bought of Anakin because of that hand, and it was removable. You could actually take his hand off. But you know, when they put on the new hand, it's still a different look, because when he puts the glove on, you still see a part of the gold sticking out the back. So it's still kind of a different take on his new gloved hand, which was pretty cool. But Bounty, I could not disagree with you more.
But when his arm explodes and he goes all just crazy time and gets the crazy eyes and he's force crushing and force tossing and just doing stuff with his stub, that's pretty bad.
No, you're right, though. That was pretty cool, because I always assumed, for some reason, you know, even seeing Darth Vader, you know, in the original trilogy, you don't know. You don't know that Darth Vader is half robe. I mean, you know, he's kind of robot, but you don't know that his arms and stuff are all cut off, you know, and he's still using the force choke and stuff like that. So I kind of always assumed you needed some sort of hand or appendage to use the force, because, you know, they're always pushing out to where they're using the force. But with this, you know, this was a whole new thing to see. You know, half an arm that he's pointing out and still being able to use the force. And, you know, he's kind of dipping in. Does anybody kind of get that he's kind of dipping into the dark side right here? Because he's kind of just cold blooded going after all these.
I don't think there's any kind of to it. I mean, he kills the one Techno Union guy because they need that apparatus just to breathe oxygen, right? And he just totally crushes them. I mean, he is dark side to the max.
Yeah, this is him fulfilling the cave. And I'm with you on that, Baron. Just, I always, because you always see what they do in the Force, with the exception of Yoda just sticking out his hand, what they do in the Force is associated with the gesture or them moving their hand or their fingers in the example of the Force choke. But Anakin's just waving his stump at them and they're crushing and they're being thrown away. And it's just makes it a whole nother thing that you don't really think about.
It definitely fits with the idea, though, of why Sidious/Palpatine is looking for Luke as a future apprentice, or why he is disappointed with what Vader has become when Vader becomes more machine than man. Because it's Anakin that controls the Force. It's not the machine parts of him. The more of him that becomes machine, the less powerful he is in the Force. At least that's the way that it's been portrayed afterwards. And I think even Lucas has talked on the subject of how he's sort of this broken figure. He was supposed to be the ultimate apprentice, and now he's damaged goods, in a sense. So it's great to see them really focusing on the idea that it is his physicality that does it. It's not the hand. He doesn't have to have a hand to force choke somebody. It's the intention in mind and the fact that he's channeling it still. I mean, he's pointing the stump at the Techno Union guy, the Skakoan. He's still gesturing, but it's the focus of his mind, not his fingers, that make the difference.
Well, it makes sense that if he doesn't have any limbs, then that's less midichlorians running around in his blood, so he'd be less powerful.
It would also give us another reason why Palpatine seems, or Sidious, seems to have a level of compassion whenever he finds the burnt Anakin on Mustafar. Maybe it's not compassion at all. Maybe there's not any father-son connection the way that Palpatine thinks of him. Maybe it's, oh crap, this was my super apprentice, and now he's crispy bacon, you know?
Well, wasn't that always part of the explanation behind what he says to Vader on the operating table about Padme, and why when Vader kind of just goes bonkers and starts crushing everything in the room, he kind of steps back with that satisfied smile on his face and maybe this guy is going to be at least a little bit useful still. He hasn't lost everything. Well, he has lost everything, but you know what I mean.
See, that I didn't take as being to test him or anything like that, so much as just to kind of add to his torment and draw him even deeper into the dark. They do something like that recently with Wilhuff Tarkin and his son Garrosh Tarkin in the Darth Vader and the Lost Command series. I don't want to spoil it, but they use a similar dynamic of how can we make a character feel a sense of loss and thereby grapple him to Palpatine even more than he was before.
I took him being able to use the Force without any actual physical gesture, just kind of waving the stump around, just more kind of like further proof of his capacity as the Chosen One. Because we don't really, other than his really awesome piloting skills, we don't see him really do anything that impressive. And so this was kind of him getting to have his moment where not only is he super powerful, he's kind of falling to the dark side. And this is kind of the potential that Palpatine is seeing in him. And it's kind of neat to see him wreaking this havoc, because that's kind of what Palpatine's seeing and why he's so interested in turning him to the apprentice. And being actually, instead of just being told that, getting to see it, I think is kind of important. And it makes it a lot more interesting later down the line when he loses that power.
One other thing that I thought was kind of interesting here is that, I mean, we talk about, I made the joke about how Anakin seems to be like, he's the answer to prophecy for, you know, everybody. But in a sense, it's interesting to see that a lot of times in Star Wars, when there is a prophecy, it does play out. It may not play out the way you think it will, but it does play out. And here, if you think about it, I mean, Anakin being the ghost hand, Anakin has to reach that mechanical hand in to stop the device. The only way he can manage to do that is because he has the artificial hand. He was the one uniquely suited to do that. So again, it's interesting to see how they're playing off this idea of prophecy and how circumstances lead one to the place where they can fill whatever they were destined for. Even in that small instance here, nobody else could have done that. Obi-Wan couldn't have done it. It took someone with the cybernetic hand.
So the Nelvan warriors are freed, Anakin takes them home, and we get that moment of shock and awe when their wives all realize that they're going to have very large men around the house, at least until Nelvan Biggest Loser takes off. Obi-Wan and Anakin return to their ship, and they receive the call that Palpatine has been kidnapped by General Grievous. Anakin orders them to prepare to jump the Coruscant, all pilots to their fighters and everyone to their battle stations. And we are left with the perfect introduction to episode 3.
Until they run off to Tie, then go to Coruscant. Yeah, exactly. It's one of the few times where I'm really kind of sad that the a cartoon didn't trump the other stuff. Because usually, you know, the other stuff, the novels and such, I always think of it as sometimes crafted with a little more care than something that's as often exaggerating as a cartoon series is, or as oddball as sometimes the current Clone Wars is. But, you know, this was a great ending. Those last scenes, he's finishing up the hand, and then they get the call and they're racing into action. And now that's no longer the way that it plays out, which is kind of unfortunate.
So now we've spent the past few weeks reviewing this series. I just want to go around and get everybody's quick final thoughts on this before we say our goodbyes. This series has always had a favored place in my EU library. I've always liked this series. I still like this series. That's kind of why we did it this summer, because no to Ewoks. Just say no to Ewoks, kids. But I've always liked this series, and I'm a big fan of the Clone Wars. There's some things that I'd like to see them do from this series, or some lessons I wish they'd take from this series and apply to our current series. But still, you know, I'm glad we came back and looked at this, because I still really enjoy it.
You know, if I was to take the now playing approach to this briefly, I would say that I would recommend this to folks who, especially who haven't seen it. If you've already seen it, then you know what it's about. But if you haven't seen this yet, absolutely try to get your hands on somehow, especially if you are a fan of the current Clone Wars, because much for the same reason that when Now Playing, we did the Transformers retrospective, we wanted to start with the 1986 movie just to have some tie-in to some of the folklore. I think this will be an interesting thing to watch if you watch the current series to kind of see what the genesis of it was. I mean, this literally did tell Lucasfilm that, hey, a series based on Clone Wars isn't a bad idea. We should really give this a go. Now, you might find it a little frustrated if you know quite a bit about the EU, and if you've been listening to us, I guess you know all the ins and outs anyway, but you know, there might be some frustrations to where you think, hey, you know, that was pretty cool, but now you're kind of telling me that maybe or maybe not did that actually happen. But either way, for, you know, forget all that. Just to sit down and watch this and enjoy some entertaining stories, I think most Star Wars fans will really enjoy that. I would definitely recommend it.
You know, if we're going to go the not playing route, I would go as far as to say that I think that people might enjoy the Clone Wars micro series more than they enjoyed some of the current Clone Wars series. And, you know, I can't help but thinking how much of a genius Tarkovsky is, that when you watch those 2-minute Clone Wars, Mike, you know, the first series, and how well he's able to tell a story in 2 minutes, and how sometimes lacking of a story we get in a half hour show. And this series really shows you what could be done if you do it the right way. And so you can take it how you want it, but that's my opinion.
I'm of two minds. I feel like the current Clone Wars series does bring a lot to the table. I think it gets put under a lot of scrutiny just because it's the current series that we're seeing, and it does have some flaws, and it's kind of, I think it is aimed at a different audience. The Tarkovsky series, I think, played later at night. I think it was intended to have more of an adult audience, but this series, watching it again, like, I had forgotten how good it was. I had thought for some reason, I'd cataloged it in my head as being mostly just really over the top force stuff and almost too hokey to buy. But this was really well done, and I'm really glad we went over this series again, because it makes me really appreciate it a lot more. And it's kind of made me want to go back and watch some of the prequel series again, especially Revenge of the Sith, just to kind of put it all in perspective.
I'll go ahead and take the no playing route here and say that yes, I would recommend checking this out if you haven't before. Even if you have before, there is some pretty good stuff in here. There's stuff that, you know, I would toss out. I'm not as big a fan of the way the Nelvon stuff was handled. I like the vision, but otherwise, you know, it's interesting how it plays, but I'm not sure that that would be my choice for the type of story to tell immediately beforehand. And there are moments where I just kind of felt like it was dragging with Dirge and such, but then you get the great stuff, like the Asajj Ventress duel on Yavin 4 and things like that really stand out. I will put in the recommendation, though, that, and this may sound profound, if you're going to watch this series, don't be like me, okay? I am a continuity guy, and I gotta tell you, I realize watching this again after a few years that I don't get as much enjoyment out of this as I should. This is a really well-put-together series. Genndy Tartakovsky did a great job. There are things I could give or take, but he did, overall, a great job. Some of the stuff they did there, we wish we'd see in the current series. Don't walk into this thinking continuity. Walk into this thinking, what were they originally intending? They just wanted a fun show that didn't tie into anything else. And you know, for that, it's awesome. On the other hand, you start thinking continuity, how does it all connect? If you're watching the last 5 thinking Labyrinth of Evil, you're going to drive yourself nuts. You're not going to have fun watching what is meant to be a really fun series. It's the same reason why I am an advocate of what will never happen. I would love to see the current Clone Wars series, and maybe even this combined with it, be a separate continuity in and of itself that only ties into the films and nothing else. That'll never happen. But pretend it is, because you're going to get a lot more enjoyment out of this than a lot of us continuity-oriented folks will.
Now, guys, before we go away, I wanted to talk a little about another Star Wars Clone Wars micro-series collectible. This is the Topps trading card set that they released in 2004. The set has 90 base cards to it, the first 9 being just individual pictures of our favorite characters. You've got an Anakin Skywalker, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda, Kit Fisto, Count Dooku, Dirge. And these cards, the first 9, just have a little quick bio of some of the main characters of the show. Then you get into the next 80 cards, which actually cover various scenes from just the first season of the micro series. So you have approximately 4 to 7 cards for each individual episode. Now, they actually do go in order. In case you're wondering, they actually treat Kit Fisto's episode as episode number.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to hear us go down memory lane a little bit and review the Star Wars Clone Wars micro series. I definitely want to give a big thanks to Jerry, Barrett, Nathan, and Jen for giving up their Sunday evenings to sit around and talk about a show that was on so long ago and letting me monopolize their summer. And we will be back when the current Clone Wars series starts up again. But we will see you all then. Everyone, enjoy the rest of your summer.
Can I go on vacation now? I mean, seriously.
Hey, everybody, make sure that you read your books, and I want a 30-page report done and on my desk the first day of school.
See you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Hey, thanks, Dan.
And good night, everybody. And as I've been waiting to do since this freaking summer started, bawk, 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 bawk.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
Hey everybody, it's Master Collectible on the forums, yeah, I'm on Polycast and Hunter, and come on, don't you have like 35 things to say now?
Oh God, it sounded like you said Holocaust and answer.
We go together.
No, that's a different show.
I'm going to nominate Jen because I'm not voting against the black person.
How do you vote against yourself? I'm so confused.
That's feels, what you get.
This feels like the posthumous conversation all over again.
I made Jen an honorary Negro when she came on to co-host with us. What? She does not know this, but I did.
I don't think anybody knew this outside of the people in your head.
Well, you know, I haven't got a reprimand email from Arnie in a while, so that's what I'm trying to do on the last episode.
I was going to say, Jen's not black.
This is what you get when you waste time.
And nobody knew what to say either, because everybody's sitting there like...
I think when we do season 4 of the Clone Wars, I'm going to play the RFR in drinking game while we record. So, go much better.
Wow. You shouldn't drink. That's like that Different Strokes episode where...
No, that's you shouldn't go to bike shops.
Is exactly. No, those I know what he's talking about. But anyway, episode 25.
Yes.
Hey, you know what, Rockstar? You know what, Bounty? You know what, Oddball? You know what, Nathan Patrick Butler? This was a great summer, man. This was a great summer. Talking Star Wars with my friends. I mean, I'm not going to be able to beat it until I go to Comic-Con. Yeah.
Please don't reference events that have already happened as if they're about to happen.
Say C6 instead.
I can't wait till I go.
This will come out after Comic-Con. You big goof.
So this was the best part. This is the best summer I ever had until C6 next year. Yeah.
All right. Kissing butt will not guarantee you a place on summer school next year. Bribes will help there.
Bribes you will get at C6. That was great. We all did it. That was great. Reverend Strong, that was just for you, my friend. That was just for you. He's going to draw us all his chickens for the next card this Christmas.
No, this is for Reverend Strong. Even Peel.
Leave that in. Take the other thing out, Rockstar, because I sound like an idiot. I'm telling you how to edit now.
That's
okay?
Horribly vague. Take that out. Leave that in. Take the other part out. Which other part would that be?
Where he called Ahsoka a hooker.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know if you meant everything after you said hello or, you know, what? What do you mean?
The singing of Ramalama Ding Dong is what he's referring to.
Yeah. For the sake of all future generations, I think that has to come out.
There, I would have sung a song from summer school, but there are no songs from summer school. So I had to pick something.